Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, May 7th, 2009. This is your host, Doug Kelly, here with Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug, how's everybody doing this evening? We have a great show on schedule.
Yes, we do. We're looking forward to having Paul Tate and Andy Burns here with us tonight for a full hour. And we're going to get into that in just a moment. Got a couple of cool announcements we want to make before we get into the show. At Paranexus.org, we've added some new features, and I had announced those earlier in the newsletter, well, earlier this week, as well as one today, and a couple of different things that we're excited about. One is Parabids.com. It's an auction site, and it's one of our ways of doing some fundraising and all that to support the operating expenses of Paranexus. The fees, selling fees, are really, really low, and the cool thing is that for paid Paranexus members, they are another 50% off. So if you are somebody who likes to sell or buy at online auctions, come and take a look. Parabids.com. If you go to Paranexus.org, you'll see a link there as well. It's Parabids with a Z.com, and it doesn't take much to register, and everybody gets an instant $7 credit to selling fees, so just by signing up. So that'll take the edge off. We'd love to have you come and list some of your items if you're already selling, or if you have some things you would like to get rid of. Take a look at that, because we'd love to have you. And then a second thing that we've done this week or so is added a wiki, which we're calling the Paranexus Parapedia. And Kevin Costa, who's been on the program before, has joined our staff to administer the Parapedia, and he's really excited about it. Kevin, many of you probably met him at the conference or remember the show he was on last year. But he studied parapsychology under Dr. Roll, who we've also had on the show. So we're excited to have Kevin on staff for that. And then a third thing that we're doing that we're really excited about, is we've always been looking for ways to add value to Paranexus members and to the membership. And so I think that we've finally gotten there. We've got a lot of different benefits to being a member of Paranexus. And one of the things that we're going to add here in the next day or two, we've already got it going, we're just kind of configuring it, is we're going to start including web hosting with every Paranexus membership. And this is not some rinky-dink ad-supported website. This is a real website, real web hosting. You've got a cPanel or a control panel. You can do all kinds of things. You can set up your own website. If your primary website is on MySpace, now is your opportunity to get a great website for cheap. And so we're going to be raising the membership dues, of course, back to where they were last fall. I lowered them last fall because I just didn't see that much value for what we were asking. And so I lowered it. Now we've got a ton of value. In fact, after adding everything up, you're going to be getting a $90 value in a membership. And right now we're going to set the memberships at $39 after discussing it and thinking about it. Still cheap, but you get the website. So those prices are going to be going up. And I'm announcing it here on the radio show for those of you who are listening in. if you're going to become a member at the current rate of $20, you need to go do it before tomorrow, because they're going to be going up tomorrow. They're not up there yet, so, and you'll be grandfathered in for the term. So anyway, some great stuff we're adding here. We've got more things in the works. Oh yeah, the registry. I almost forgotten about that. We've been working on the registry. We've been talking about the registry, the database of anomalous events. We've been talking about the certified Paranexus field investigator program, and that is going to be opened up no later than tomorrow as well. We're going to be start taking applications for field investigators, so, and all the details will be on the site. So if you're interested in that, we've had several people who have expressed interest. We're going to be taking apps, so we're hoping that you will take a look at that and apply. All right. I wanted to get those announcements out really quick because I didn't want to get into cutting into our time with Paul Tate and Andrew Barnes. So let's get into it. Tonight we have Paul Tate, Andrew Barnes from SoulSmack.com. They have the video out, which is really cool, Your Worst Nightmare, Supernatural Assault. And we'd like to welcome them to the show. Welcome, Paul and Andrew.
How are you doing, Doug?
Hi.
Hey, welcome, guys. So nice to have you
with
us.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Nice to be talking to you.
Yeah, we're excited about having you guys on, and apologize for the snafus, whatever happened the last couple of weeks ago, but, you know, we got you on for tonight, and we're going to pick your brain. Just for those of you who are not familiar with SoulSmack, their website is soulsmack.com. A really well-done video trailer, and I'll tell you what, if that video is anything like the trailer, you guys have done an absolutely awesome job on this.
Yeah, very well done.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Thank you very much, both of you. We're excited about it. It's been selling quite well on the Internet.
Excellent. Tell the folks a little bit about what your website is about and what your research is. We know that, you know, some folks might not have been with us last time you were on, guys, and it was just a very brief time. So if you don't mind.
Sure. This is Andrew, and I can fill you in a little bit about the website. SoulSmack is kind of a hip consciousness site, spirituality, paranormal, anything along those lines, and its content progresses as the production team comes up with new video material. The current project we've been on is, of course, what we're going to be talking about this evening, which is sleep paralysis and the sense of intruder or supernatural assault that often accompanies it. And Paul and I have been working together for a little bit over a year now. We've both been involved with film and video for a long time. Paul in the corporate area and also in music. He can fill you in on his background from England before he came over to the U.S. And my project before I met up with Paul was to film in New Orleans, actually, victims of Hurricane Katrina 6 months after that. And Paul and I teamed up to make this first documentary. And we have four or five or six other documentaries in the pipeline.
Wow.
One of which will be done this summer on shadow men and ghosts.
Oh,
and we're
wonderful.
Looking forward to seeing how that goes along. So that's sort of a little overview to us, and it's really nice to be on your show tonight.
Oh, our pleasure.
So how did this all come about, the sleep paralysis thing? Fill us in on the beginnings.
Well, this is Paul, and when I was 22 years old, I actually had sleep paralysis myself for the first time. I never had heard of sleep paralysis, and when it happened to me, it was a terrifying experience, which we'll discuss some of the symptoms of what happens during a sleep paralysis attack later, but it was a terrifying experience that I had, and I had no answers for. I didn't know what it was. It just came out of the blue. I'd never had it before, and it left me in a daze. I was frightened. I was confused. I didn't know what to do. Back in those days, the web, I don't even believe we had the web. That was back in 92.
Yeah.
So I don't remember when the web came out, but I don't remember having internet access, so I couldn't look it up. I didn't know what to call it, so I didn't know, you know, library books to get or anything. It wasn't until 5 years later, I just happened to be watching TV one night and saw a documentary that actually mentioned sleep paralysis and showed some of the symptoms. And when they did that, I actually could relate to what they were talking about, and it was almost like a light switched on in my head, and I said, that is what happened to me that night. So now I had the name for it, so I could look into it, and I did. I looked into it more, and I discovered more about the phenomena and how, you know, many people around the world have had this. So I'd had it at 22, and it took me 5 years to find out what it was. And when I met with Andrew, we decided that, you know, we were going to embark on a filming project, and we were talking about various topics, and I don't know how this came up, but we between us, it came up, and Andrew had some experience with it as well, and we decided, let's look into this, because, the amount of people at that time that we found that had it, were looking for answers out there, and we thought we could provide some and help them to come to terms with what had happened to them.
Yeah, I can add a little bit in there, too. Some of my family members and friends had had sleep paralysis, and we didn't know what it was, but I knew from their descriptions that I was never going to tempt it to happen to me, and I was never going to make any jokes about it.
Yeah,
it's very scary. And when I was in high school, I actually attended a conference that was given by Dr. David Hufford, who appears in the documentary. Incredible guy. And that was the first year that he had, after he had completed his work and his book called The Terror That Comes in the Night, where he laid out the description of this thing that happens to people and was able to determine that it didn't just happen in Newfoundland, where he went to research legends from the point of view of an anthropologist. He, when he got back to his university in the United States to begin teaching again and finish his work, he discovered that this occurs in all populations, in all cultures across the world. And I attended his lecture, and it was amazing. It's been, he's been working on this for 30 years now. Now we've got this documentary, which has been, had a really big response.
One of the interesting things about it that you guys pointed out last time is the fact that the sleep paralysis is actually a state of altered consciousness. And I think that,
yeah,
you know, some of us who have experienced it, and it can be traumatic, there's no doubt about it. I know when I had it, mine was very unsettling. But, it transcends culture, as you said, and it's universal to everybody. But, you know, I like the angle that you guys are taking on this, because it's totally different, and it kind of differentiates itself from science. And so if you guys can just elaborate on what you think might be going on or what you're hypothesizing about maybe occurring during that altered state, I think our audience would be as captivated as I was.
As far as the science is concerned, and we definitely need to talk about this altered state, as far as the science is concerned, part of the science explained well, and then the other part, the supernatural part, if you want to call it that, science has no explanation for. And it's very important to understand that clearly. It's very tempting to say, yes, well, this is some sort of hallucination you're having. But you're not having a hallucination at all. This is not a hallucination. Your listeners who've had this know that we're talking about something other than a hallucination or a dream. You're wide awake. You just can't move. The can't move part where you're paralyzed is understood. There's no problem there. Your brain puts chemicals into the bloodstream that prevents your muscles from moving while you sleep, and sometimes those chemicals are still active when you're awake and you can't move yet. But something about the vulnerability of being paralyzed like that makes you prone to having this other intrusion or presence come to you. And the neatest thing for us has been that we were able to take scientific research and shine the light on this experience. So these are not anecdotes. We have victims that speak about their own personal experience, and then we hold them up to the science. And the more the science shines light onto this experience and makes it clear, the less clear of an explanation there is. The only explanation that that's believable is that this is supernatural. So, you know, it may not be supernatural, but I think it's brilliant the way Dr. Hufford himself puts it. He says, well, okay, if you don't like the supernatural explanation, then tell me the other explanation. And there just isn't one. There's no scientific explanation for this sense of intruder or presence. And then I'll turn it over to Paul to talk about this altered state, which I believe will be going into OBEs and things.
Yeah. Well, when, you know, we all, a lot of us know that when we go into a sleep state, our vibrational frequency that our mind operates at changes drastically, and it's almost going from a waking vibrational frequency level to a meditative sleeping vibrational frequency level. And when we go down into those vibrational frequency levels, anything can happen there because our level of perception changes altogether. So if, you know, we wake up in this paralytic state, or we're paralyzed, we're laying there and our eyes open, but our bodies can't move. But our minds are still operating on this frequency. So it opens us up to the fact that if something was in our room that did exist on an alternate vibrational frequency, all of a sudden we can perceive it right in our surrounding. And for some people, it's terrifying to open your eyes and see a dark, ominous shadow standing in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Or what looks like an apparition or an old witch, which they call the hag. Some people see a vapor cloud, like a fog, and it just envelops them. So there's a lot that goes on in this altered state. A lot of people actually do mention alien abduction, and you know, this can also be attributed to their belief system. If they watch a lot of sci-fi and have a keen interest in aliens, when this happens to them, it tends to be, you know, linked to an alien visitation or an alien abduction. Whereas if they're more religious or more into the paranormal, it becomes either a shadow being or a demon.
That's interesting.
The research, it is very interesting that the cultural viewpoint of the victim or the experiencer tends to determine how they interpret it. But there is evidence to distinguish between a classic abduction and a classic sleep paralysis experience, and that's a research based approach. But if you look at just what people are calling it themselves, you end up with these subjective analysis. You know,
do you know what the differences are, Andrew?
This is going to be presented in one of our upcoming documentaries, where we're going to work with some of the foremost researchers from Harvard University on abduction. At this point, I'm more aware of the similarities between sleep paralysis and abduction. But basically, right, you have this intruder coming into the room. Sometimes you see one or two or three shapes that have a sort of a humanoid physiology standing in front of you. Well, if you tend to believe in UFOs, you're going to think that those are aliens standing beside your bed observing you or doing tests on you. And if you tend to believe in ghosts and demons, you're going to think this is some sort of dark, evil demon creature. But that's really where the crossover, that's a classic example of how the crossover happens.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's what we talked about, Grant. No, I was just going to say, that's what we talked about, Grant.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I find really fascinating about it is, when and having experienced it myself, is that you get this very primal feeling. I think when you're paralyzed, that goes to the most basic part of your existence or your brain survival and you get into that survival mode for a second, and you have this primal kind of fear. And what
can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Yeah. Go. Well, I'm just curious. You talked about this primal fear.
Mm-hmm.
Are you really saying that for you that fear was from the paralysis or from the sense that something's there watching you?
For me personally, actually, it was a combination of both. Okay, but initially, it was that feeling of being paralyzed yet being conscious, and to me, that was very unsettling. And then, out of my peripheral vision, was the feeling that there was a presence there. Okay, that somebody was in the room with me, and so. But my point is I think that whatever, if it's an altered state, and there is something that's slipping through that altered state, I think there's a similarity because between that and a haunting, in the sense that maybe whatever's there kind of feeds off that energy. You know, whether it's fear or whether it's anxiety. I mean, if your cultural prism says to you it's a demon, then it's terror.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, the fear aspect, you mentioned that they feed off of these
or maybe it's attractive.
Yeah, it could be, and a lot of people do talk about, you know, these shadowy, demonic, non-material entities feeding on fear. Fear is food, you know, so if you emanate fear, you attract, you know, this type of entity to you. So maybe by driving up levels of fear or people being afraid, this could be an answer to what's happening. But you're right. Fear seems to be associated with, you know, this whole sleep paralysis spiral that can happen when you go to bed and you fear having a sleep paralysis. You can actually continue to have it and increase the levels of sleep paralysis because you're afraid. You drive up those fear levels and it sends you into a vicious spiral.
Mm-hmm.
You get what you fear most, right? I mean, whatever you focus on in your mind is what happens. I mean, that's just life. Whatever we focus on is what comes about. We focus on the good, the clean, the pure, the powerful, the positive, as Ziegler says. That's what you're going to get. If you focus on what you don't want to happen, well, you know, your subconscious is saying, hey, okay, that's what he's focused on. That must be what he wants. You know, the subconscious doesn't make decisions. It just carries out those decisions. And so, go ahead.
And it kind of goes in with, you know, you've all heard of The Secret and the laws of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a classic case of, you know, people every day using the law of attraction without even understanding what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, somebody's playing a piece of classical music and they've never been trained to play music. Well, we have that level of control over our or skill over our subconscious mind, but we don't know that we're doing it. It's like almost like it's happening in the background, and having these negative thoughts or these fearful thoughts will then just bring you more of what you ask for or what you focus on.
And,
so
and
it's
the
amazing
thing is, I'm sorry, we're kind of filtering it too through our physical filter. And, you know, the way that we're interpreting it may be totally inaccurate.
It's true. You say that because we look around us at everything that we perceive to be solid, and nothing is solid, as you know. Everything's made up of subatomic particles that are all held together by vibrations. They're all held together, and we see them, and the light that bounces off of those objects goes into our eyes, and that's where it turns into electronical impulses again, traveling through our brain, and at the back of our brain it's assimilated into what we perceive as our sense of reality. Now, if your sense of reality is slightly different from someone else's, or your perception is slightly different, maybe the way that those images come together at the back of the brain will differ. Maybe if there's something else, an interrupter taking place, such as an altered state of consciousness, all of a sudden those images that are filtered out by our brains are no longer filtered out and allowed to pass through and become our sense of reality. So this all ties into, you know, everyone's perception. Our perception and our belief make our reality. And if people realize that, you know, then a lot of this starts to make more sense as to it could be a possibility, and, you know, people's minds can be opened greatly if they can just ask a question about, like, the topic we're talking about tonight, instead of saying it couldn't possibly be true because I didn't read about that at school, or, you know, if that were the case, everybody would know about it. It, you know, we have to advance this whole way of thinking, because we need to open our minds more. There's a lot happening in this world, and people are becoming more and more in tune to the spiritual side of stuff, and it's amazing. It's amazing to see that we can have talk shows like this today and talk about this stuff openly, and that's what's going to actually increase people's awareness and increase knowledge on the subject when everybody starts to converse. We all will bring something to the table. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. We'll all bring something to the table, and between us, we'll all be able to figure stuff out much more quickly.
At least explore it, you know, and the thing of it is, it is the only way we're ever going to get to, or at least work our way towards the answers, is through mutual cooperation, sharing the data and all working together, and being open-minded and expanding our horizons. And, you know, unlike a traditional mainstream science, you know, which says this is the way it is, and they get myopic at times, it's better to broaden your horizon, because nothing's ever going to be black and white.
Well, you know,
You go ahead. I was going to say, I got an email from a science magazine this week. I'm not going to mention their name, but they basically sent me a link to Wikipedia explaining what sleep paralysis was, and said, this is what sleep paralysis is. It's nothing to do with spirituality, nothing to do with demonic forces, nothing to do with shadow beings. And I was like, well, you went to Wikipedia and copied that. Do you believe everything that you read, or do you make your own assumptions based on what you've researched? So it kind of goes to show what you're up against when you're dealing with people like that.
Well, that's where it doesn't differentiate that much from religion.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point in time, they're just saying, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. Except that science said it, I believe it, that settles it. And that's not the way you guys should be operating. We'll never have paradigm shifts that way.
Well, you know, this information is so important to researchers. You know, whether you're researching parapsychology / hauntings, or whether you're researching abductions, you know, this whole thing comes into play, because it can happen. It can be a product of the mind. It can be a physiological thing. Well, let me ask you this question. From your research on this sleep paralysis in different cultures, can you elaborate at all on the differences, how different cultures, what they see, what they don't see, and how it differs from the American culture, for example?
Yeah, this is Andrew again. I'd be happy to talk about that, and both Paul and I can fill in a lot of the spaces here, but we did study several cultures, and just like a person who tends to believe in the abduction theory will translate and interpret a sleep paralysis experience as an abduction. Every individual culture will see this through their own lens. But the most fascinating part is that there are some similarities and synchronicities in different cultural interpretations that are really stunning. For example, when this presence comes into the room, even if you don't see it, you feel like there's something menacing in the room that's going to attack you. And I know your listeners who have never talked about this before are saying, yeah, that's exactly what happened to me, this fear that I can't explain. Well, after the fear goes by, or after you start thinking about the fear for a while, you start interpreting it, explaining what it is. It's a ghost, or it's a demon, or, you know, it's some people think it might be someone actually in the house who's just trying to rob their house, and they feel physically threatened. In Cambodian culture, if we move over to a completely different part of the world, this demon that comes into the room is really going to be a ghost from one of the people that they saw brutally murdered. In other words, for them, if you witness a violent death, then that person's ghost will haunt you. So in the night, you wake up and you see this thing coming at you. Well, the synchronicity that I'm talking about is in the concept of fear, because for the Cambodians, if you feel fear, you become more vulnerable to having a sleep paralysis attack. And it becomes a terribly vicious circle, because the more afraid you are, the more likely you're to have an attack. And the more often you have an attack, the more scared you get. So they tend to spiral down into this situation where they have it 3, 4, 5 times a week. And there is some sort of link to PTSD and childhood trauma, so that literally 90% of the population, of the Cambodian population, experienced sleep paralysis for years and years and years.
Wow.
And this, it's profound. The society is incredibly troubled, and roughly the same percentages have PTSD, so there's some sort of link.
I would think
between,
that hardly anybody came through the Cambodian, the Khmer Rouge, without seeing something that was absolutely despicable.
For 4 years, the entire population was starved and had to work every day. And if you were too sick to work, then they punished you by not feeding you.
Oh.
And during that whole time, anyone who got out, it was in 4 years, entirely 4 years. So if anybody got out of line, they were killed. If anyone had an education, they were killed. So the sort of witch hunt for educated people or politically active people went on for the entire 4 years. And everybody lived in tremendous fear.
Glad I don't live there.
You breathe.
Well,
right.
I mean,
I can't even imagine how that must have been.
I don't know how they survived it, but we talked. we interviewed a young guy named Sambat. It was his first time in the clinic. And he'd been having sleep paralysis for 25 years, or however long it's been exactly since the genocide. He had seen his father brutally murdered, and I won't go into the details, but he came and talked in front of the cameras, and you can see him on the camera. He looks scared to death, and he felt like we were some sort of political inquisitors who were going to do something, and then he realized we were nice guys and we were just going to talk to him, but he didn't have sleep paralysis after that. He came back to the clinic a week later, and he hadn't had any more sleep paralysis. He's basically healed from this. Well, what was experience? His experience, he talked about it. He talked about it with people who believed that it happened and said, hey, well, that's got to be rough, but I know it will last forever. And the process of talking about it diminished his fear so much that it appears that the decrease in fear ended his attacks in sleep paralysis. And that's the same thing that happened to the Americans who were interviewed on the film. Heather interviewed on the film. She had never talked to anyone about it before because she thought they were going to say she was crazy. So she lived in social isolation on it for 20 years or so. And she talked on the film. She had one more experience that was not a dark experience. It was an experience filled with white light. In fact, her boyfriend actually saw the light. And for a year now, she hasn't had any more experiences of this. And so the synchronicity I was trying to talk about is really, even though, no matter what the cultural interpretation is, it's all centered around fear. And if the more you have fear, the more likely you are to have some sort of attack.
Fear, if it's all centered around fear, then it must be filtered through belief.
Well, I think that's entirely valid. You know, people need to change their mind. So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it seems like you got three components, and I'm not saying that, and I'm just wondering, because as you guys well know, if a person experiences the emotion fear, there's also a physiological and chemical response to fear. And so you've got fear, you've got your cultural prism that you're viewing it through, and between those two factors there, it's just, you know, who knows what those contribute to the whole process. but they can't all be one. But it seems like they have to be a combination of several. Does that make sense to you guys, what I'm trying to say? That you have this
basic several
process.
Factors.
Yeah, well, first you have this basic process. Fear is going to cause you to, your body to have a rush of adrenaline and you know, the flight or fight response. And then on top of that, you know, you are experiencing all of this trauma. I don't know, guys. Go ahead.
I want to add one comment to our listeners. If you're having a hard time with chat seems to be screwing up tonight. Refresh your screen and see if that doesn't fix it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry for drifting, guys.
It's pretty easy to do. But I think you're absolutely right about the physiological effect of fear. If you experience fear, you're going to get a hit of adrenaline, and then that's going to completely affect your feelings again. And until you, for example, sit down and meditate for a while and let your body get rid of the adrenaline, emotionally you're going to feel like you need to escape from something. And that's got to play in. And I'd like to point out, we've been talking about this for a little while here, but you independent filmmakers out there, this is an area ripe for research. What is the connection between the chemicals in our body and fear, and what does adrenaline do to make us so out of balance? You know, I mean, you can get an adrenaline hit 10 times a day or 20 times a day if you let your mind think about scary things. So there's a lot more research that can be done. Our documentary is based on, you know, on the people we interviewed, and Dr. Huffer's research, and actually Dr. Devin Hinton's research too. But it really ought to be viewed as a starting point, and I hope a lot more research will come out that will be entertaining.
So in the chat room, Camille's talking about when she had an active aggressive haunting some years ago and was scared. The entity was very strong. She said as she gained knowledge and control, the fear dissipated. And, you know, that's what I teach, too, that knowledge cancels fear. And that's what we coach our clients in. You know, you learn about this stuff, the fear goes away. And that's what you were talking about with a few minutes ago with that fellow, right? Once he conquered that fear, the stuff went away.
Yeah, I mean, you actually, you know, you come to terms with what's happening to you. You're understood by people who you're trying to relay your experience to, and you're made to feel like you are not the one to blame. You are not crazy. You are not the one, you know, the only one who is suffering with this experience. So when people are able to get into that situation and converse and talk and openly express what happened to them, that level of fear obviously has to go down. It won't increase if there's an understanding there. I mean, I've had sleep paralysis more than once in my life. And after the first time was scary, but after the first time for me, because I had a better understanding about it, I wasn't at the same level of fear at all. It was more like the second time it happened to me, it was like, wow, you know, I was freaked out for a second, but it didn't haunt me for days afterwards, like or weeks afterwards, like the first one. And the last time it happened to me, no fear at all. So, you know, definitely education, as you say, will help to create an understanding and stop the levels of fear that exist in people.
You know, the other thing that's so interesting about it is, what if that heightened state contributes to our ability to pick up the vibrations if we are in an alternate state? You know, maybe that's the only way our mind can interpret that alternative reality. Because I think you can almost, you know, draw a similarity or a comparison between that state and what some people experience in induced chemical, you know, like the shamans, you know, experience that altered state of reality, and, you know, they have a little bit better idea how to control it, whether it's through something they ingest or through the more experience they have. And some of the things that you've described are similar to what people who go through that ritual, that shamanistic,
ayahuasca
experience. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well,
it's
you know,
and
again, that it all boils down to an altered state of consciousness. You know, they ingest this ayahuasca, which contains dimethyltryptamine, and
mm-hmm.
it alters their perception, it alters their state of consciousness and their spiritual state. And, you know, a lot of these shamans say that they go off on these fantastic journeys, and they learn, they come back with messages, they see visions of the future, they meet spiritual beings that didn't even exist on this earth, but they're strange spiritual beings. And this has been known about for a long time. And, I've said this before, when we go into our sleeping state, our pineal gland, which is our third eye, is known in the world as the third eye, it releases a chemical into our bloodstream naturally. And it's funny enough because it's the exact same chemical that is found in ayahuasca, dimethyltryptamine. Mm. It's released into our bloodstream during our sleeping time. So if it can do that to the shamans, why can't it do something to us
mm-hmm.
during this state of sleep? So it's definitely something worth looking at, you know?
I think it's a really beautiful model that we're looking at here. Basically, the suggestion is that these other entities, now this is just a model, you can do with it what you want, but that these other entities are all around us, they have their own frequency, and we interact with them, human beings interact with them in the same way that we interact with oxygen or water or other animals on the planet. And an argument can be made that we spend our entire sleep time and our entire dream time in an ability to access this other vibrational frequency. We could be hanging out with other entities every time we go to sleep. And I'm not saying that's what's happening, but I'm saying it's a compelling model, because it seems that every time we change our consciousness, strange things happen. We see strange things. And I think you have to take the shamans as a real serious example, because they decide, there are shamans out there that have decided that sleep paralysis is as good a pathway as any to achieve an out-of-body experience. So they go through this very unpleasant, very scary
mm-hmm.
sleep paralysis attack, but the unpleasantness somehow leads them to start an out-of-body experience. Maybe the unpleasantness is a real good inspiration to get out of your body and leave it so that you don't have to experience it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're back in this concept of synchronicity, where many different cultures seem to be talking about the same exact phenomenon. At some point, you have to say, you know, this really, in addition to being interesting, this really may be proof of a supernatural reality.
Well, on the other hand,
it may actually be proof.
On the other hand, it could be proof of a physiological source, couldn't it? Let's tear that apart.
Yeah, go ahead. I'd like to hear your point.
Because I'm interested in this. Okay, so if this similar things are happening across cultures, you know, according to the model you just spoke of, how would that disprove or at least argue against a physiological source?
Well, that's where this whole argument hinges. Science explains things very, very well, including all the way down to labeling these very subtle chemicals that change our muscle tone and dimethyltryptamine. We can measure these things, but then science stops talking, and everything else that happens flies in the face of science. Science says, you know, it's not supernatural because it can't be supernatural. Well, that's anything but a scientific statement.
No kidding.
That doesn't... That's absolutely irrational, right?
And they stop. They draw the line at physiological. That's where they stop. They say, okay, the explanation is simple. Just like the person who sent Paul the Wikipedia thing that said, you know what, that settles it. I'm done with it, okay? And, you know, we really can't, I think based on what you guys have explained, it's deeper than that. It's also it's a physiological, it's a cultural, and it may very well be a portal to an upper frequency or a different consciousness that we are moving into. And the only thing I could, the thought that kept coming to my mind when you were talking about it, Andrew, was anytime we make a transition, okay? Some people say that when you're born, you can't remember it, but it's a very painful experience. Maybe even very causes a lot of apprehension and fear. So maybe when we're when we are presented with an alternative reality or an alternative consciousness or exposed to it, our first reaction in the transition is fear.
It is, because it's so alien to our, you know, to our sensory system that we, you know, everything around us today, we can touch it and, you know, and see it, and it all looks a certain way, and it all feels a certain way, and sounds a certain way. But the reports coming from these people when they have these experiences, and I myself have had them, it's not an earthly feeling. So obviously, it's immediately frightening to you. I mean, it's probably the sensation of, you know, am I dead? Am I dying? Is this what death is like, you know, for a lot of people? So, you know, people get frightened when they feel themselves, and they're conscious, they're awake when this is happening. And some people say they see themselves floating up out of their body, or, you know, they're laying there in bed, and all these strange things are happening. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, we really need to look at this, because there's a lot more to our existence than the nuts and bolts that we're being presented with from school and and the way we've been told from science. We need to look into this. We can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot more things in our philosophy that can be dreamt of.
All right, so let's
along those lines.
Just before we run out of time here, I wanna get to what I want to do first is I want to kind of sum up where we're at. What we've talked about, and you guys will correct me if I'm wrong, but then I also have a little bit of an area that I want to expand on. Now, remember that I'm looking at this thing as an anomalous researcher, paranormal researcher, and this is good information for researchers to use when they're dealing with this kind of thing with clients. So if I'm following things properly here in the midst of doing the control board, what this says to me is that when somebody has an instance where they wake up and they see a shadow person, an apparition, even an alien or whatever, a demon, whatever you want to call it, you know, succubus, incubus, whatever, that this could be, it could have a physiological source, but it also could be real. Is that what you guys are, I mean, it could be a real thing.
I think it's very tempting to compare the two, to say, well, here's this one thing that people are talking about, it's this experience where they feel attacked. So what are the explanations for it? And it's tempting to say, well, there's a physiological explanation for it, and there's a, whatever you want to call it, a supernatural explanation, or an explanation that it's a non-material being that defies the laws of science. Well, it's a little bit more complex than that, because there is no scientific explanation for this at all.
Mm-hmm.
The science is done as soon as you stop talking about, well, as soon as you completely talk about the sleep paralysis. Paralysis is caused physiologically, and we understand it very well. There is absolutely no scientific explanation to explain why people see the door open in their room.
Mm-hmm.
There's no scientific explanation to explain why they feel like they're being attacked, why they feel absolutely abject fear. But it gets a little more complex than that. there's no scientific explanation to explain why the bed sinks down and why you can feel something crawling up onto your body and sitting on your chest. There is absolutely no scientific explanation beyond that's not true because it can't be true.
Right.
I would love to shine more scientific expertise and scientific light onto this and come up with something, but what is happening is the opposite. The more scientifically we approach it, the more unexplained sides of it that we come across here. So really, what I'm trying to say is the scientific explanation doesn't exist. There isn't one. There may be a desire for a scientific explanation for it, right? The psychiatrist who has someone coming in as a patient and saying, this happened to me, and the psychiatrist says, were you awake? And the patient says, yes, I was wide awake. I couldn't move, but I heard these footsteps sliding across the floor, and I was being choked, okay? When that happens, the psychiatrist says, oops, psychotic episode, real serious chance of schizophrenia here. But for no basis beyond the belief that these kinds of things aren't real, therefore the patient has a problem.
Right.
That is not scientific. It's unethical. It's extremely unethical when you decide that that person needs to take medication. And then let's look at one more piece of evidence here, and really let's not get confused. 1.2 billion people on this planet living today have experienced sleep paralysis with some sort of presence or sense of intruder or, if you will, supernatural assault. And as Paul and I say to each other, you know, 1.2 billion people can't be wrong.
Right. They're all schizophrenics, right?
We all need
all
medicine.
Schizophrenics, right.
All right,
we
I have
all
a question.
Need medicine. I hope that was helpful because that's
yeah.
Scientifically kind of falls down.
I just like to clarify, we all don't need medicine.
Well, all of us?
I'm not touching that one.
Our guy. All right, here's a question. Here's a question from our staff member, Mike Jones. And he asked, from an abduction standpoint, there are cases of people being wide awake during daytime and nighttime, and this, with the same symptoms as that happens during sleep paralysis. Is there some sort of commonality of the perception or spiritual end of experiences that suggest interaction on a dimensional or spiritual end with entities? Not sure.
I personally believe, I'd be interested in what Paul has to say too, but I personally believe that a lot of this points to vibrational, dimensional experience. Can we prove it? Well, no, we can't prove it. But I'd like to encourage people to think on these lines by talking about another area of science. We have the laws of physics. We know that everybody's supposed to follow the laws of physics. And I think that recent scientific discoveries have shown that 90% of the matter that is influencing the movement of the universe is invisible to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they've been able to see that something's affecting the movement of the universe is out here, but we can't see it. So it's 90% of it. So that means that all of our laws of physics have been potentially based on only 10% of the material that's out there.
And it's interesting to take lines, you know?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let me just interject this, then Paul can take off. It's interesting that they'll believe in that. They'll believe in 90% of nothing, but yet when it comes to the stuff that we cannot explain scientifically, I'm sorry, it just doesn't happen. It's not real. Go ahead, Paul.
No, it doesn't. And it's a pretty ignorant, I believe, ignorant attitude to have, because how can you go around saying that 90% of what you can't measure can't be true, you know? And it's almost like driving I don't know how to put this into a perspective, but it's like driving through the desert at nighttime with a flashlight as your source of light. Everything around you can't see. You can only just see the little bit of sand in front of you. That's pretty much what we're up against, and science and scientists that base everything around us being only one way because, you know, they're using what they can make, that 10% they can measure. Well, I think that, you know, we just need to start looking beyond them or beyond that type of attitude and start looking at all possibilities. I don't believe any possibility is a silly one. People can come out of anything that sounds ridiculous, and it will probably turn out to be a possibility down the road. So
I just think we're hyperdimensionally challenged, guys.
Yeah.
I always feel guilty about that.
I think it's like
the fish in the water doesn't realize anything other than the water that's around him.
Yeah.
You know,
or a fish in a pond.
That's right. And as four-dimensional creatures, we have no perception of the dimensions that may overlap or completely surround us. We may be just like those fish in the water, like you alluded to earlier, Andrew, and that this may be going on all around us, and we're oblivious to it.
Well, it may be. It's not insane. It's not irrational to draw that conclusion. You know, and when someone feels like there must have been something in the room with them because of the fact that they felt their bed move, you know, that's not irrational. They're making rational decisions. And by the way, you know, we kind of jumped on the scientists here a little bit, but we're not downing science. Science is what enabled us to bring this documentary. It's just that the assumptions in science that prevent people from discovering new things, I think we need to be a little more honest about, you know, some of those.
Okay, I agree with you 1,000% on that one. In fact, everything you guys have been talking about, excellent stuff. Now, we're down last couple or so minutes. Let's talk about how people can learn more about this. I know, always too quick. How can people learn more about this? How can they get your video? This is your opportunity to shamelessly plug your site and stuff.
Okay. Well, anyone who wants to find out more about sleep paralysis and what we do can go to our website, which is www.soulsmack.com, SOULSMACK.com. And you can buy the DVD right from the website. It's $9.95 plus shipping. And we also have forums that we are we have forums set up as a resource center, and we are trying to encourage people to come there and converse. You can also view the trailer on our website. It's right on the front page. You can view the trailer and see some clips on there. And then the forums are working. People are conversing, and you can look in there. There are hundreds of, you know, messages talking about sleep paralysis, and we are eventually going to have that site set up as a resource center for sleep paralysis. And we're hoping, I'm going to tag this onto the end of your transmission, but we're hoping to set up a network or a web page with a network of psychiatrists and clinicians in each state who want to register with us and put their name on so people can contact them.
Sounds good. All right, soulsmack.com. Go visit, buy the video. It's well done, an excellent, excellent video. And folks, listen to this this program again. Listen to the archive of it, because there's a lot in here that can bear on paranormal research. And again, excellent information. We've talked about belief. We've talked about different things that we've discussed tonight. So good stuff. And Paul and Andrew, we really appreciate you taking the time again to join us tonight. Excellent.
You're welcome. Podcast.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
Paul, thank you very much for having us on the show. It's been a great show.
Likewise, we've enjoyed ourselves.
Yes, you're welcome.
We'd like
back
to have you
time.
Back sometime too. You know, when you get done doing another one of your documentaries, let's look
yeah,
up again
be finished
and
in,
have you back.
Yeah, we'll have that finished in about 5 or 6 weeks, and we'll call you.
Please do. If you got any new info. New info or anything.
Yeah,
so,
we will.
And we're just about out of time, so hang with us. And listeners, we really appreciate your time tonight as well. Please take a look at paranexus.org for new stuff we've added, parabiz.com with a Z, and also the Paranexus Parapedia. Folks, we're out of time. Have a great night. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night.